Thinking Aloud from the University of Warwick. Hello and welcome to Thinking Aloud. I'm Stephen Bates, a PhD candidate in the History Department here at Warwick, and with me is Dr. John Watts, lecturer in modern history at Corpus Christi College, Oxford, and fellow of the Royal Historical Society. Dr. Watts works primarily on late medieval European politics and political structures. His books include Henry VI and the Politics of Kingship and The Making of Polities, Europe 1300 to 1500, while his many published articles include essays on The Pressure of the Public on Later Medieval Politics and Public or Plebs, The Changing Meaning of the Commons. He's visiting Warwick today to give a paper on neoclassicism and English political culture in the decades around 1500, which is related to his current project, writing a chapter for the New Oxford History of England volume covering the years 1461 to 1547. Dr. Watts, good afternoon.
Hello.
And can I ask you, what would you say is your favourite primary source?
Oh my goodness. Well, I like... The sorts of things I really find interesting are ones that are rich in language, because I'm particularly interested in political language, I suppose. So the kinds of sources I mostly work with are those which show the currencies in which politicians are talking, alternatively, the kinds of language used by writers who are in some way or another addressing the public sphere. So I spent a lot of time working on kind of commentary literature from the 15th century, the works of people like Sir John Fortescue or William Worcester, the sermons that chancellors give in Parliament, the speeches that are made by politicians and so on, because those reveal the sort of language frameworks of the time.
So it's mostly textual sources.
It is mostly textual sources, yes. I mean, I need to get to grips with reading buildings, reading pictures, reading clothes and so on, because I'm not only writing a chapter of this New Oxford history, I'm writing the whole damn thing, and it has to cover a very wide range of facets of life, as it were, in this 1461 to 1547 period. But most of my experience is working with texts, yeah.
And do you find most of that changes with the invention of print in this period, or is it very much a straight transference from manuscripts into printed books?
That's a very good question. I mean, a lot of the emphasis now is on continuity rather than radical change, and even, I think, slightly strained arguments, actually, about the instability of early print and so on, and it's unstable by comparison to what we have nowadays, but it's pretty damn stable by comparison to manuscripts. It's true that there's a substantial copying trade in manuscripts by the late 15th century, and quite, you know, elaborate kind of book production even prior to the coming of print. So there's more standardization, more ease of access to multiple copies, more reproduction of texts and so on. And I don't think that printing really changes the discourses, but I think it does alter the spread of textuality through society, as it were, in a way which is still important. So I'm slightly old-fashioned on that one, I think, but it's an area I need to find out more about.
And on a practical point of view, how do you find working with paleography? Because, I mean, some of the 16th century handwriting that I've had to work with has been things like the King's first book is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, so I believe you. Well, 15th century hands aren't a picnic basket.
I
think for this current project I'm going to be mainly working with printed material, certainly as we move into the 16th century. I'm realising that I shall have to check, like all Tudor historians, material from the letters and papers and so on. So there will be some nasty encounters in queue, I suspect, ahead, but haven't really done that yet.
Conversely then, could you tell us a little bit about your favourite secondary source or secondary sources?
Oh, golly, that's hard too. I suppose the kinds of work that I really like combine some kind of sense of the mental world, the public world, the discursive world, if you like, and the details of how things happen, and a plausible kind of material base or institutional framework. So, of course, like all historians, I want everything, as it were. But the best histories, I think, do manage, usually through a degree of artfulness, to combine these these different elements and provides you with a picture of the world, which I suppose is, yeah, it's both intellectually satisfying and historically plausible. And I suppose it's hard to think of a particular example of that. But actually, Peter Lewis's book on late medieval France is not a bad case study. I mean, for years, I used to set that for students as the best way of understanding the late medieval world, even if they were just doing English history, because it's such a brilliant word portrait, I think, of a whole society, and with particular interest in its political dealings, which I suppose is where I'm coming from. I'm really a political historian. So that would be one. That would be one great book.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for listening to Thinking Aloud.